MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
A warmer from the low. Welcome to Bumpy Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Heaps with myself, Guy Heaps Peterson, now part of the Beast and Family Podcast. Welcome in a new audience, as if you were taking a look at the NFL season and you're coming here now that it's come to an end, well, we've got a lot of goodies for you. As the college basketball season, it is hot, it is heavy. We've been seeing a lot of great mid-major basketball, and we'll be chatting with a gentleman from Mid-Major Madness. In segment number two, that'd be Nick Lawrenson. He does great work there. He's also a part of the Queens NC coaching staff. We're going to be chatting with him about what we can expect from some of Monday's games. We'll take a little bit of a look at the smaller conferences, some of the teams that may have popped to him. We're also going to recap a little bit of what we saw from the MAC versus Sun Belt Challenge as well. That was something interesting that unfortunately got buried on Saturday. They really should have put that on Friday, so that way it should have shown a little bit more. But that said, Nick, he does such incredible work taking a look at this great game that we all know and love. So he is going to be joining me in segment number two. In the final segment, we're going to get you guys picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots. If you do have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, you do have one of two ways we offer those in. First one is my Twitter/XTimeline at GNN_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, they mean does not matter. So as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other way is via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you are able to fire in whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Did not get in any questions today, but we did have a fun day of college basketball on Sunday. Let's take a look back at it. Try to find some trends and try to get to know these teams a little bit better.
A game from yesterday is Greg buzzing about. Here is the Rowdy recap.
And if you're new to this, our DK Network right to pick is 19 games above 500 this year. So that has been absolutely incredible. I had the over in Iowa versus Minnesota. Minnesota now 20-3 against the spread. Incredible considering the state with the smallest strengths in the union, Minnesota. Hopefully you enjoyed that joke, but nothing many about the money that they've been able to make this year. They were about a 6 to 7 point underdog depending upon when you took it. They've fallen this one by kind of 90-85, and legitimately Iowa should be feeling very fortunate that they were just able to get out with a win, because they were down at one point about 20 or so points in this one as Dawson Garcia had himself a really nice start for Minnesota. He was able to supply the team with 18.7 boards, but really just didn't give you much in the second half. I think they had to leave this game early. If I remember correctly, you did have for Minnesota, a 12 of 26 three-point shooting performance. Meanwhile, Iowa, they got to the free throw line going 23 of 28 there. And for Iowa, they had Mr. Owen Freeman step up in a big way. 17 points, 14 boards, 4 blocks, controlled things down low for Iowa to be able to get the job done. And for Iowa, they've been one of the best over teams in all of college basketball this year. That should not come as a shock to too many people. 16 overs to 8 unders for them thus far this season. So has been able to make you quite a bit of money. UIC, Illinois Chicago has been an interesting team this far this season. And last game before the Super Bowl, they were able to take down Northern Iowa by a count of 71-65. UIC has been one of the best three-point shooting defenses in all of college basketball. Allowed Northern Iowa to go just 4 of 21 from three-point range. And then CJ Jones along with Flip Sabashki, they were able to combine for 45 points for UIC, so they were able to get you to the window as well. The last game of that MAC versus Sunbelt Challenge didn't go the way of Louisiana. The Raging Cajuns got it done 86-60. They've been an interesting team all season long. They hold Bowling Green to shoot just 4 of 21 for 3, while they went 9 of 18 from 3-point range. We'll certainly talk about this challenge a little bit more in segment number 2 with Nick Lawrenson, but just a rough day for Bowling Green all across, as they have been a pretty solid team all season long. Weren't able to show that here. Out there in the Atlantic 10, one of your better money-making teams has been UMass, but as a double-figure favorite, they do not cover against Rhode Island. They're now 14-9 against the spread. Rhode Island showing a little bit of fight here. 81-79, Rhode Island does fall, as for UMass, it looked like they might be able to get the cover in this one. They were up 74-61 with about 4:40 remaining. The line was, in a lot of places, about 11.5-12, but then Rhode Island made a bonsai charge late. Rhode Island goes 8-15 from three-point range, but UMass, they go 11-28 with Rasheul Diggins being able to really help out the cause. He was able to supply the team with 18 points. Meanwhile, for Rhode Island, Jaden House, he was able to give the team 22 points in this one. And for Rhode Island, they were able to do a solid job of being able to take better care of the ball than normal, 12 turnovers in this one. So that kept them very lively in that one. For Memphis, they get just their second home cover all season long. This has been a Memphis team that has been lighting money on fire all season long, but they do improve to 8-16 against the spread. They take down Tulane by a count of 90-78 for Memphis, 9-24 from three-point range. They were able to get a double-double out of Davy Jones, who's really had an amazing year. 23 points, 10 boards, and then for Tulane, they uncharacteristically had 14 turnovers in this game. That was quite costly for them. Also out there in the American Florida Atlantic, they cover in overtime against Wichita State. Wichita State was about a 7 to 7.5 point underdog. Wichita State now 8-14-1 against the spread after they go to overtime and they lose by 13 points. It's by kind of 95-82. And I will say, for Wichita State, it was looking like it was going to be a bit rough for them, because with about 6 minutes remaining, they were outside of cover territory. They made a nice run late, and then they just got lambasted in overtime, with Florida Atlantic getting a nice game out of Vladislav Golden down low, 20 points, 9 boards, 5 assists, and a partridge and a pear tree. Well, off the bench, 19 big points out of Brandon Weatherspoon was big. Meanwhile, for Wichita State, they lose the turnover battle 17-9. So that was quite costly to them. Villanova's been a team that's been all over the place this season, but they absolutely handed it to Seton Hall, 80-50 for the final. Villanova was up 70-41 with about 5 minutes remaining in this one for Seton Hall. They go 9-30 from three-point range, while Villanova 14-30 from distance. So an absolutely beastly performance there, and a not-so-beastly performance from Northwestern. Northwestern has actually been a very good over team thus far this season, but they weren't able to provide that on Sunday, as 68-63, they win, but they do not cover against Penn State. And for Northwestern, been a very random team that's been about 11-11-2 against the spread this season. For Northwestern, they go 6-16 from three-point range, and they win the turnover battle by a count of 11-6. But for Penn State, reason why they were able to hang out lively in this one was the fact that the VCU transfers and Nick Kern along with Ace Baldwin, they combined for 35 points, 12 boards, and for Baldwin, he gives out 8 assists in this one as well. So he didn't necessarily have a whole bunch of just massive games on this card, and you did see UAB get another cover, 70-63. They were able to take down Tulsa in the American. It was a very interesting day in general. Charlotte, they get the win, but they don't get the cover by kind of 73-70, and Charlotte has been a pretty slow team all season long. That was a very uncharacteristic over for Temple. Go Owls, as they've been having a little bit of a rough go of it. And for North Texas, they're now 13-8 against the spread this season as well, with the way that they don't win, but they cover against SMU, 70 41-68 the final in this one, as for SMU, they were down for much of this game. North Texas had firm control of it. It felt like they were leading by about 6 for the entirety of it until they just flat out weren't. But I mean, it's going to be a very interesting American moving forward, and it's just an interesting landscape currently in all of college basketball. If you look at the last 7 days in college basketball, home underdogs have made a surge. 61-47-1 against the spread over the last 7 days. Meanwhile, favorites overall are hitting at about 44.6%. Home teams, they're only hitting at about 49% against the spread in the last 7 days. And in the last 7 days, we've been seeing some nice over action. 167 overs, 160 unders, and 8 pushes along the way. Meanwhile, if you look at the entirety of the college basketball season, the overs are still hitting at about 51.4%. 2,085 overs, 1,970 unders, with home underdogs overall for the season 548, 558, and 18 against the spread. So that's what we're seeing in college basketball right now, and that's what we all got on Sunday. Now, let's take a look at what we're going to be getting on Monday and the mid-major landscape with our good friend over there at Mid-Major Madness, Nick Lawrence, and right here on Cusco Suits with myself, Craig Hughes Peterson, now a part of the UC Family Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Guskus Heaps with myself, Greg Heaps Peterson, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. And it is always a pleasure to be joined by this man, Isaac Lawrence. He does such a tremendous job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. I know that he is hard at work taking a look at just all these mid-major teams, along with trying to elevate the Queens NC program that is in year number two at the Division I level. This man, he has been covering D1 basketball for a very long time, and he's one of the best at being able to do so. As we do have Nick Lawrence aboard. You're able to follow him on Twitter /X at the letter N, last name Lawrence, spelled L-O-R-E-N-S-E-N sports all together. And Nick, it's always a pleasure, my friend. Thank you.
Greg, I always appreciate you having on. Yeah, it's been a tough little weekend for us at Queens. Keep blowing these leads late. Blew one. We're recording this on Saturday night against a good Austin Peay team. They do have some really good talent, but it's been a fun week of college basketball so far. The early slate on Saturday was a lot of fun, although we had three games on Friday. Two of them were humongous, and then the third one was big for our mid-majors at-large chances. We have a good American slate on Sunday. The Sun Belt MAC Challenge has been awesome. We're in closing time. We're in crunch time right now. A couple of these teams have maybe four or five games left on their schedule. Really important for them to get top four seeds, win regular season titles. Although they don't get bids to the NIT anymore, those still get banners.
Yeah, it is going to be so interesting to see what we do get towards back half of the season, because we are seeing a lot of these mid-majors be able to elevate, come to the forefront. And I'm so glad that you did mention the Sun Belt versus MAC Challenge. And my big question for you is, do you think that more conferences might be doing this? Because we recall the SEC Big 12 Challenge used to be big. They went away from that. And let's call it what it is. The Sun Belt did do a pretty good job of being able to dominate this challenge. But that said, I thought that it was really nice for these conferences to come together and really have this.
Oh, yeah. It was awesome. I mean, the Sun Belt right now, as it stands, have two teams towards the edge of the bubble. They're one loss maybe away from hopping off the bubble and just needing winning the conference tournament and getting that bid. The win for App State today in double overtime against Toledo, that's huge for their resume. It's probably their third best win. James Madison beating Akron, that's their second best win. Everyone wants to talk up this JMU team. I think we mentioned it last week. All JMU's really beat is Michigan State. Michigan State really isn't all that. Their next best win was Kent State. So this win against a league-leading Akron by double digits at home, that's huge for them. I think more leagues should do this. I know there was a time where the A-10 and Mountain West were trying to do it. It's almost like bracket busters. You get the top teams in the league facing off against each other. Everyone else gets another game to kind of get a little break into their conference play. It's really good for these resumes. I love it. I feel like more leagues should be doing it.
Yep, I'm right there with you. I thought that this was very tremendous that we were able to see this come to the forefront. And I mean, it was a big opportunity for James Madison to be able to get a nice resume-boosting win, and they were able to pick that up against Akron. They were able to really put some distance between they and the competition in Akron late, and I thought that that was very big for them. And
just taking a look at the mid-major landscape, I really do think that James Madison has really hopped out to me as one of those top teams along with Indiana State. But how do you take a look at both of those conferences with regards to the Sun Belt and the Missouri Valley? Because I feel like both of them do have that clear number one, but you've got a lot of pesky teams out there in the Sun Belt, and you certainly have that in the Missouri Valley Conference as well.
Yeah, it's kind of crazy when we talk about in the Sun Belt piece, you know, App State and JMU have been the darlings. They had great non-conferences. They picked up some pretty big road wins. But you look at a team like Troy. Troy's won six straight. Coach Cross's bunch is 10-2 and in a tie at the top of the league with App State, and they beat App State. And that's the only game they're playing this year. So if it comes down to the wire and Troy continues to win these games, everyone's talking about App State and JMU getting at-large bids. Troy might just win the regular season title and kind of mess around with all that. You also have Louisiana, who won share of the regular season title last year, and they ended up winning the conference tournament and battled Tennessee pretty hard. They're a good team, too, and a pesky bunch. Outside of those four in the Sun Belt, it's kind of questionable, but the Missouri Valley has been great, as always. Indiana State, with another big win, beat Missouri State by two, pulled away late there. You have Drake, who's a really good bunch. They aren't going to be competing for an NCAA tournament at large bid, but I would not be shocked if we see them play Indiana State again come Arch Madness time. I believe they split the regular season series matchup. That is Indiana State's only loss in conference play. And then you also have other teams, you know, Bradley. Bradley's been good, but they just haven't been able to beat Indiana State and Drake. You have Southern Illinois, who kind of has problems closing these games. They were up about 13, I believe, at the under four media timeout on Saturday against Illinois State, and they blew it. We saw that against Austin Peay earlier this year, and it's happened a couple other times against Belmont, who's a good team. Malik Diaz has been playing probably one of the best in the league, one of the top five players in a really, really strong lead coming over from Vanderbilt. He has Belmont back at 7-7 after winning two straight, beating Murray State earlier this week. Murray State has a whole bunch of high major transfers who are good. UNI was supposed to be one of the preseason favorites in the league. They're kind of hitting their stride here. Missouri State 6-8, they're good. Evansville 6-8, they're good. There's no nights off in this Missouri Valley. We're in the Sun Belt. If you're not playing one of the top four teams, you should be beating these teams. And I think that's really what is a detriment to JMU's resume right here. They lost on Wednesday night against Texas State at Texas State, a sub-200 KenPom team. You can't have that if you want to be an at-large team in the NCAA tournament. That's really going to sting come March.
Yep, it is going to sting, and I do think that that is so well said, because when it comes to the, shall we say, bottom teams out there in the Sun Belt, they're just not playing the same way that they did a season ago. But I do look at both of those teams, and they certainly have been able to rise up. As joining me on the show, we do have Nick Lawrence, and he does tremendous work over at Mid-Major Madness, and he's joining me right here on Cusco Soups. And as we know, when it comes to these Mondays in college basketball, typically we don't get the creme de la creme in college basketball. We get a lot of Southland, we get a lot of MEAC, we get a lot of SWAC, but out of those three conferences, is there any sort of teams that you do want to keep your eye on? Is there perhaps a pesky team or two out there? Sans, I do have to throw this in there. Sans McNeese, who has clearly been the top out of all three of those conferences.
Yeah, I was going to say McNeese. You know, they're always fun to watch, and they're pretty much the runaway champion in that league. I know they play Texas A&M Corpus Christi. They won by seven. When a couple weeks ago they played on a Monday night, it was an absolute thriller. It was on ESPNU, I believe, on Monday night at 7 o'clock, and McNeese was getting blown out for a good part of the game, and they were down about 20 at the beginning of the second half, and they just kept chipping and chipping and chipping away and ended up winning it at the buzzer. So that's a really good win for them. We have Towson playing on Monday night, and it's going to be interesting for this Towson bunch. They lost against Delaware on Thursday, snapping the second longest home win streak in the country. They're trying to start a new one. An Elon team, who's a little bit pesky, comes into TU Arena. I was about to say CQ Arena because that's what it was called for so long, but TU Arena. Towson's trying to fight back up there towards the top. You know, Charleston got a big win. I know this is a little bit out of the way, but Charleston got a big win on Saturday against Drexel at the 6. And now we have UNCW and Charleston up at the top of the CAA, like many people predicted in the preseason. But it's really interesting because they've already played twice this year. UNCW won both of those matchups. There's a chance for UNCW to get that one seed, Charleston, to get the two seed again. Hofstra was the one seed last year when Charleston won the conference tournament. So that'll be a fun one. We have a good SWAC matchup between Jackson State and Arkansas Pine Bluff. I think Arkansas Pine Bluff's really a sleeper in this league. They have Joe French. They have Kylan Milton from Conway coming back home. Linnell Martin. They have four double-digit scores. They also have Rashad Williams, who's averaging 17.2 points per game. But UAPB is sitting there in the middle of the league at 5-5, but I think they're much better than that. Jackson's trying to fight their way into the conference tournament. They're 4-5. It's a huge matchup because there's only 8 teams that make the conference tournament in the SWAC. They're going to be fighting it out there. Another big one in the league is Alabama State at Southern. Southern obviously had a great non-conference schedule. Non-conference slate. They went into UNLV. They beat them. They also went into Mississippi State and they beat them. And that was a top 25 team at that time. Those are 2 bye game wins. They're 14-9 on the season, tied in first place with Grambling right now. And they'll play an Alabama State team who's super under the radar. They're 11-12 on the season. Coach Madlock's son's leading the way, just like he did at South Carolina State a couple years ago. They really couldn't put it together fully last season, missed the conference tournament. This is their year to kind of fight in there. A couple really strong SWAC matchups with those two. That's what we got to bank on Monday nights. MEAC, SWAC basketball. It's a lot of fun. I'm kind of annoyed, you know, some of these schools are pulling it off YouTube because it was always very easy to watch, very accessible. Like Mississippi Valley State, you know, they're 0-22 now. It's horrible basketball to watch, but sometimes it's just for the entertainment factor. They have the 2 best announcers, in my opinion, in mid-major basketball. Now they're behind a paywall. I don't know why the SWAC is moving back in time with this kind of stuff. Sorry for my rant, but I hate that. I hate that. We do have 2 good SWAC matchups that should be accessible with Jackson State UAPB and Alabama State Southern.
Yep, I'm right there with you. And I mean, if you're willing enough to be able to watch some SWAC basketball, you should be able to do so for free, especially with Mississippi Valley State. And hey, you're mentioning the play-by-play announcers. You know who else wants to be able to watch it? People that have money on the game as well. So you're able to attract schmucks like myself, as we always have aboard someone who does a great job of taking a look at this great game. That would be Nick Lawrence, and he is joining me right here on Cusco's Hoops. And certainly we've taken a look at some of the more marquee teams that are out there when it comes to the mid-majors, but are there a few teams that we have yet to mention that are really starting to pique your interest and are teams that maybe they got off to slow starts, but now they're starting to put it together and they could potentially be dangerous moving forward?
Yeah, one we mentioned last week was VCU. VCU went and they defended their home court on Friday night. They beat Dayton. This is a week after they beat Richmond, knocking off Richmond and giving them their first loss in conference play. That's now 2, 4, 5, 7 of 8 wins for VCU, a program who struggled in the non-conference. They started league play 0-2, but they've really found their stride here. Another one was Loyola. I know early on in the season I was getting some crap. They played FAU close. I said, this Loyola team has one of the best transfer portal bunches in all of mid-major basketball. Damon Delican's been playing like an all-league player that transferred from Dartmouth. He did that for a long time over there. They have a good bunch. And the American, you know, we had a big game on Tuesday night. USF came back, and they defended their home court. They knocked off Charlotte. This is the longest winning streak in conference play for USF, a program that's been historically pretty bad. 9 straight games won in the American Athletic Conference. Amir Abdul-Rahim bringing pretty much 75-80% of his bunch over from Kennesaw, and this A-Sun group is just tearing up a league that for a good part of the season had 2 top 25 teams. So I've been really impressed with that. In the Horizon League, Green Bay did an awesome thing on Saturday. Noah Reynolds didn't play. He's been sick. I was told this is some little inside information for you, Greg. When they played Robert Morris, he dropped a 30 ball on Thursday, first time he got pulled out of the game, he went and he threw up in the trash can. He still dropped. He had a straight flu game. He dominated. He didn't play on Saturday. They came back, raucous atmosphere in Youngstown, beat a really good Penguin team. They're alone in first place in the Horizon League. That's a really good bunch. We mentioned Indiana State, of course. They continue to roll. Colgate's pulling away in the Patriot League. We have McNeese in the Southland, and then Grand Canyon in the WAC. We've been mentioning them all year. They just keep winning. People like myself are sleeping on them, but it should not be overlooked just how strong they've been this year. They're playing Southern Utah as I speak, but they're 11-0 at home. They've won 4 straight with a win in the Southern Utah game. They will have a 2-game lead on the top of the WAC. They're up 20 as we speak, actually. So there's some teams that are really piquing my interest. You know, the A-10, we talk about it every week. It's a revolving circle. There's new teams every week, and this week it's Loyola and VCU.
Yeah, with the Atlantic 10, I'm very interested to see what we're going to be getting out of those teams as well. As joining me on the show, we do have Nick Lawrence, and he does tremendous work over at Mid-Major Madness, and he's joining me right here on Coast to Coast Hoops because the Atlantic 10 is one of those conferences that always has some very interesting teams. And I do want to also throw at you the CAA, which is known as the Coastal Conference now as well, because we're going to be seeing that Towson versus Elon matchup on Monday. It's one of the few major matchups that we are going to be getting. But what do you make right now out of that Coastal Conference where you've got UNC Wilmington, who's got that win over Kentucky? It's been a little bit diminished by what Kentucky has been doing recently, but still they were able to get the job done in that one. You've got a Towson team that it's been a little bit wobbly for them, but they've been able to do some relatively solid work as well. But all in all, I do take a look at this conference, and I do think that that's one of intrigue, and I'm glad that they always have those 1-2 Coastal Conference games every Monday as well.
Man, Greg, I'll tell you one thing first. I hate that it's the Coastal Conference now. I grew up with the Colonial. They had their conference tournament in Baltimore. And then a couple years later, they added in D.C., and I've been going for years. It's going to be weird if I go this year calling it the Coastal. It just doesn't feel right for me. But the last couple years, it's really been a top-heavy league. This year's the same. We have six teams up there at the top. You mentioned UNCW. That defense has been great for a long time. Takeo Siddle and his bunch are having a fun time. They've won four straight. They swept the season series against Charleston. They control their own destiny if they can continue to win out. They have two very winnable games at home this week against NCAA and Teen Elon. So if they take care of business, they'll be 11-3. We have Charleston, who snuck under the radar because they didn't have as strong of a season as they have had last season, even a non-conference. They're 9-3. They've won three straight. But like I mentioned, they lost those two to UNCW. So they don't control their own destiny. But if they continue winning, it could be good for this Charleston bunch. They play William & Mary a week from when this is being released. I plan on being there. They still have all the great faces, and they added Frankie Policelli. Many people aren't talking about that. He's been one of the best three-point shooters in the country over the last couple seasons, coming over from Stony Brook. He hit six on Saturday afternoon, against Drexel, and really pushed them to that 10-point victory. That Drexel bunch had a great start to conference play. They were the last unbeaten in the league, but they've lost three straight. Great defensive bunch. Amari Williams is an NBA talent, one of the best defensive players in college basketball. They play a Hofstra team this Thursday who started 4-4 in league play. They were kind of middling for quite a while, but they've won four straight, and now they're right back in the race of it. I don't know if I already mentioned this. I know a lot of things are passing my mind right now, but there are six teams within a game and a half of first place. If Towson's able to beat Elon on Monday, there will be six teams within a game of first place. That Towson team lost to Delaware. It's kind of been sneaky all season. The Blue Hens have won four straight. They go to Elon and A&T this week. A&T, always a tough place to play, but it's a top-heavy league. It's a top-heavy league. You have Campbell with Anthony DeLorso. Geno Ford's bunch is kind of coming along. Monmouth with King Rice's son, he's playing well. A&T had a good start to league play, but they've lost three straight. Northeastern's won two straight. But the teams at the top of the league should be beating these teams at the bottom of the league. It's starting to happen now. It's a fun league. If it wasn't on Flow Sports, I know we've mentioned it before, many more people would talk about it as one of the elite mid-major leagues in college basketball.
Yeah, I think so as well. And I just take a look at this league, and I've been very impressed by what I've been seeing all year out of it. And I do think that we're in for a lot of fun on Monday with that Towson Elon game. And we're always in for a lot of fun when you join the show, Nick, because you do an absolutely tremendous job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love of college basketball. Let the good people at home know what's on tap for you and how people are able to follow your work on social media and other platforms.
Yeah, we have another big week of mid-major basketball coming up. You can follow me over at mid_madness and at nlawrencesports, both on Twitter/X. Queens has two home games this week. We'll hopefully bounce back. We have North Florida on Wednesday, who just came off a tough loss at home to Central Arkansas, and Jacksonville on Friday. Craziness there today. Jordan Mincy got tossed before the first media timeout. He had some choice words for the ref. Three fouls on the same possession. They're an interesting bunch to watch. We played them once. It was probably the longest regulation game of the season. I don't know if there's stats out there in all of college basketball. It was about a three-hour regulation game. It was absolutely insane. But those are going to be two fun games. I know Friday slates are pretty barren, so we have a couple ASUN games that you can watch, but I'm looking forward to another big week in college basketball. What, we're only 3 weeks away from March Madness.
Yep, we are just 3 weeks away from March Madness, and it is going to be madness, and you never want to forget about those conference tournaments as well. Everyone loves the NCAA tournament, but those conference tournaments, man, that's always so much fun. We are getting closer and closer to it, and a man that does a tremendous job taking a look at this great game that we all know and love is Nick, and it is always appreciated when we're able to get him aboard. A big thanks to Nick Lawrenson for joining me right here on Cusco Soups, now part of the Beeson Family Podcast. And coming up next, it is that time of the podcast to give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we get some bank shots.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation. I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to Across Generations, where the voices of Black women unite in powerful conversations. I'm your host, Tiffany Cross. Tiffany Cross. I want you all to join me and be a part of sisterhood, friendship, wisdom, and laughter. In every episode, we gather a seasoned elder.
But even with a child, there's no such thing as the wrong thing if you love them.
Myself, as the middle generation, I don't feel like I have to get married at this big age in life, but it is a desire I have and something that I've navigated in dating. And a vibrant young soul for engaging intergenerational conversations.
I'm very jealous of your generation that didn't have to deal with Instagram and Tinder.
This is Across Generations, where Black women's voices unite, and together, you know how we do, we create magic. Listen to Across Generations podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
If you love sports and true crime, then there's a new podcast from executive producer Dan Patrick and hosted by me, Jay Harris, that you won't want to miss. Playing Dirty Sports Scandals. Each week, I'm squeezing the juiciest details from some of the biggest sports scandals ever. I'm talking Marcus Dixon, Olympic gymnastics, Cain Velasquez, salacious Super Bowl-level scandals. Join me on the dark side of sports by listening to Playing Dirty Sports Scandals on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Big Take from Bloomberg News brings you what's shaping the world's economies with the smartest and best-informed business reporters around the world.
Western nations like the U.S. and Europe.
Mexico will likely have its first female president.
And then you have China.
And help you understand what's happening, what it means, and why it matters.
He'll get his yo-yos to Europe in time. But the longer this drags on, the more worry he's getting.
They knew that they needed to do this as fast as they possibly could to get a drug on the market as fast as they could.
I'm David Gura.
I'm Sarah Holder.
I'm Saleha Mohsen. We cover the stories behind what's moving money and markets.
Basically, everyone was expecting, if not a calamity, certainly a recession.
But the problem is that that paperwork, as our reporting showed, is fake.
As someone who's covering the market, I'm often very worried about an imminent collapse. So I'm thinking about it quite often.
Listen to The Big Take on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
And we're back here in lovely Las Vegas for Coast to Coast Soups with myself, Greg Oops Peterson, now part of the VSIN Family Podcast. Always great to be joined by Nick Lawrence, and he does tremendous work over at Mid-Major Madness, taking a look at this great game that we all know and love. I know that along with that, he's been doing some incredible work over at Queens NC, trying to get that year number two program at the Division I level up, and hopefully in a few years when they're eligible to the NCAA tournament. So always great to get him aboard, and now it is that time of the podcast. I give you picks and analysis on every game on the betting board for this College Basketball Monday as we hit some bank shots.
Most financial establishments close at a certain time, but not here. It is time for a side and total on every game on today's betting board bank shots.
Do note that, as per usual, any changes that are made to these plays will be listed up on my Twitter /xfeed at @unit_81, and we're going to be going in the Las Vegas rotation order. We've got four games, the ACC game, the game between Kansas, Texas Tech, Elon Towson, and West Virginia TCU up top. Those are the games involving the bigger conferences, and then the games involving the Patriot League, Southland, MEAC, SWAC, the smaller conferences. Those are going to be the ones at the bottom. Both are in time order. So let's get things started with 881, 882 on the board. It is Wake Forest, a third to face off against Duke. And Duke does find themselves as a favorite between 7 and 7.5 points. Totals between 152.5 and 153. I set my line at a 7.5. I'm not willing to lay anything more than the 7 that I'm seeing, but I'm going to be willing to lay the 7. This Duke team has been highly efficient, both on the offensive end and defensive end. This is a top 25 team in terms of points scored on a per possession basis, with Kyle Filipowski really doing some amazing work. Guy is shooting just below 40% from 3. Gives you 8 plus boards, 17 plus points, and what has been so big for this Duke team is that they just don't turn the ball over. Top 15 team in the country with regards to fewest turnovers on a per possession basis. You're not getting a whole heck of a lot of scoring out of Tyrese Proctor, but he's still giving you north of 10 points per contest. Does a good job giving out north of 4 assists, fewer than a turnover and a half per contest, so I really like what he's been able to bring to the table. And then this Duke team, while they're not like necessarily monsters of midway with regards to their defense, this has been a top 75 defense in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis as well. And they go up against a Wake Forest team that's been a little bit shaky for them on the defensive side of things, especially when they hit the road. They are giving up about 13.6 points more per 100 possessions in a roadside shoot court environment rather than at home, but a much improved defense from a season ago. They are now 58th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but it is a little bit of a top-heavy Wake Forest team. You got four guys that give you 14-plus points per contest. Cameron Ildreth, Austin Carr, both around 14 to 14.5 points per contest, with them combining to shoot about 39.5% from 3, and Carr along Efton Reed. They're your two main rebounders on the team. Really, the lone two guys, they give you north of 4.7 boards per contest. They're combining for about 15 rebounds per game, and both do give you a block and a half per game as well. And then Kevin Boopy Miller, he gives out about 4 assists at 2.5 turnovers per game. He's been shooting in the mid-30s from 3-point, while Hunter Salas really sets the table. He's able to give you 18.5 points per game. Now, you do have Tomari Monsanto back the fold, and when fully healthy, this guy is a machine at being able to stroke it from 3, but he was limited to just 8 minutes against NC State. Seems like he's still dealing with injuries, so I don't think he's going to be too big of a factor in this one. And this has been a Duke squad that has been solid with regards to being able to guard the 3-point line. I'm not going to call them amazing or anything like that, though. This is a Wake Forest team that, in their own right, while they've been able to shoot quite well from 3-point range, they've actually done a very good job of being able to guard the arc as well. They've ascended into the top 85 with regards to opponents' 3-point shooting percentage as well, but I do think that Duke is going to be able to do a nice job of being the more efficient team here, as they do turn the ball over a little bit less, so Wake in their own right, they only turn the ball over about 11 times per contest. Duke not necessarily a heat-seeking missile with regards to being able to generate turnovers, but Duke allowing teams to shoot about 32.7% from 3, and then on top of that, just having some good overall rebounding outside of Kyle Filipowski, getting Mike Mitchell to give you about 6.5 boards per contest, getting good production out of Jeremy Roach in the backcourt. I do think that all in all, Duke just has a little bit too much, and as we know, Cameron Indoor, an incredible home court environment. Neither of these teams are necessarily playing at warp speed as well, so I do feel like this total is set a little bit too high. I did set my total at a 147.5 ever since John Shire took over. It has been a slower Duke team. They're about 225th in all of college basketball with regards to total possessions per game. Wake Forest, they're clocking in more around 96. So looking at the under, set my total 147.5, going to lay up to 7 with Duke, 883, 884 on the betting board. West Virginia, it's a road face-off against TCU. TCU is a favorite of between 11 and 11.5 points. Total on this game is 149 to 149.5. I did set my total at a 147.5. I'm looking under. With West Virginia getting back more of their full allotment of pieces, they've been speeding up a little bit, but this team has had to play a little bit more of a slower tempo than I'm sure that they were anticipating, because they've had guys in and out of the fold all season long. Kirk Reese has been pretty solid in terms of his three-point shooting, but it's been a big concern with him being able to take care of the ball, as when he's been out there for his 14 games, he has given out about 4.5 assists, but 3 turnovers per contest. Raekwon Battle, he's been your main scorer with 15 points per game, but it's just not an efficient 15 points. He's shooting less than 40% from the floor, 27.5% from 3-point range, and he has really slowed down with regards to his scoring, 10 points or fewer in 4 of the team's last 5 games, so that's a little bit of an issue. You've been able to have Quinn Slezinski help out a little bit down low, while Jesse Edwards has been dealing with injury. Good news is Edwards back in the fold, had 9 rebounds in the team's last game against Texas, so that fortifies them a little bit down low, and that should allow West Virginia to be a little bit better on defense. So in the 2 games that Edwards has been back, they got blasted, 86 and 94 points surrendered against BYU and Texas, but they're going up against a TCU team that they're going through a little bit of struggle with regards to their offense as well, scoring 66 points of fear in each of their last 2 games. And for TCU, I do think that this is going to be a squad that starts to slow down just a little bit more. They played up tempo because they were able to with a sharp and soft non-conference schedule. But at their core, this is a little bit more of a defense-oriented team, a team that ranks in the top 50 nationally with regards to the rebound rate, while West Virginia, outside the top 125, should have ascended a little bit with Jesse Edwards back at the fold. But Emmanuel Miller, he really leads the way and does a bit of everything. 16.5 points, 6 boards, steal per contest on 40% from 3. TCU now shooting about 36% from 3-point range. It's solid. It's not necessarily amazing, but this team does get a nice boost from being at home rather than playing in a road/shoot-your-core environment. They're just more efficient in all facets of basketball. Their 3-point shooting percentage ascends darn near 37% when they are at home. Meanwhile, the TCU defense has been much better when they've been at home. They've also been giving up about 17 points fewer per 100 possessions at home rather than in a road/shoot-your-core environment. You've been able to get a lot of that 3-point shooting, by the way, out of Trey Tennyson, who's now been able to give you 10 points, shooting 45% from 3-point range. TCU does have a little bit of an issue turning the ball over, 13 turnovers per game, but West Virginia, one of the worst teams in all of college basketball at being able to generate turnovers. For West Virginia, it's been a slog for them on offense, fewer than 70 points so far their last 5 games. I don't think that they get to 70 here, and I do think that TCU, a team that's much better defensively at home, exerts their will. I did set TCU as a 13.5 point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay 13 with them, and with regards to Soto, 7 at a 147.5. So, going under and looking at TCU laying the number. 885, 886 on the betting board. Elon, it's a road face-off against Towson, and Towson is a 12.5 point favorite. Your total on this game, it is 137. I set Towson at 12. So here at 12.5, I'm going to be willing to take the points. Just really hard for Towson to be able to win by margin because this is one of the slowest teams in all of college basketball. 348th of your 362 Division I teams. So they're going up against an Elon team that they leave a lot to be desired defensively. And it's not like this Elon team is some sort of a blazer either. Elon, about 244th in all of college basketball in terms of total possessions per game. At Towson, they do a solid job with their defense. They're 104th in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, a top 30 team in the country in terms of their rebound rate against an Elon team that, well, they are well outside the top 200 with regards to their rebound rate, and this Elon team, 342nd in the country in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. The big question mark becomes, can Towson be able to execute inside? Because Elon, with regards to their 3-point shooting defense away from home, it's honestly not bad. They allow opponents in a roadside shoot-to-court environment to shoot about 32.2% from 3-point range. That's going to play, and for Towson, they have been able to get quite a bit of a spark offensively ever since Nenda Tark has come into the fold. He was one of those two-time transfers that missed the first 10 games of the season. He's been able to supply 11 points, 2.5 assists, stealing half per contest. It is a Towson team, though, that if it comes down to it, they do shoot just 65.3% at the free throw line. Bottom 50 mark in all of college basketball. That could decide your cover right there. You've been able to get some relatively good production from Charles May, who's been able to give you about 11.5 points, shoots 37.5% from three. And for Towson, 11.7 turnovers per game. It's not bad, but with how slow their tempo is, it's also not amazing. They're going up against an Elon team that has really fallen on some tough times in terms of their offense as well. This is a live and die by the three sort of team. And with this Elon squad, they've been able to break the 72-point plateau in just one out of their last 9 games. Now, they do have a foursome that all give you between 10 and 12 points per contest. DK Simpkins, Max McKinnon, Rob Higgins, Sam Sherry, but they really don't have a lot of rebounding to go along with it. Nobody gives you north of 4.6 boards per contest. Team does shoot about 36.5% from 3-point range, but it does diminish a little bit when they do have to hit the road in a roadside shoot-to-court environment. This is an Elon team that from 3-point range shoots more around 34.6% from 3-point range, and they do go up against a Towson team that has been able to do a pretty solid job of being able to guard the arc. All in all, this is a Towson team that builds itself on defense. They allow opponents to shoot about 33.5% from 3-point range. I do think that we've went a little bit too far on this spread just because I do think that Towson pulls it off, but not necessarily by a 12.5. I'm willing to take the points with Elon. Made them a 12-point dog and did set my total 136. Elon, leaky with regards to their defense, but Towson, super slow and super inconsistent on offense. So looking at the points with Elon and going to be looking at the under. This last game on the normal Las Vegas betting board of my DK Network. Work right up 887, 888. Kansas, it's the road face off against Texas Tech. Texas Tech, a 1-2 point favorite. Total is 147.5. My write-up is going to be on the total. I'm going to be taking a look at the under. This Kansas squad has really been able to do a good job of bearing down with regards to their defense. They have now given up 65 points or fewer in regulation in each of their last 3 games. I do have to point that out because the Kansas State game did a write-up on that one as well. That was a game that they gave up some points in overtime on, but in regulation, they really held them down. But, I mean, this Kansas team is doing a very good job defensively. 30th in the country overall in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. Travels relatively well. They give up about 6.5 points more per unearned possessions when they leave home. They're still 37th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis when they are in a road slash neutral court environment, and they go up against a Texas Tech team that is much more at home with regards to their defense when they are in Lubbock. They rank overall 121st in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, but that climbs to 54th in the country when they're at home. This is a Kansas squad that has been able to do a relatively solid job with regards to their overall field goal percentage. They are a team that does rank in the top 20 nationally in terms of overall field goal shooting percentage. That said, this squad is dealing with the injury to Kevin McCullough. He might be back in this game, but you've got to expect that he's going to be less than 100%. He's been supplying 19-plus points, right around about 6 boards, 4.5 assists per game. But even with him out of the fold, they still played really good defense against Baylor. You know that McCullough probably wants to be out there because his former team is Texas Tech. That's where he transferred in from. But that said, I do think that even if he does play, he's not necessarily going to be full go. It's been a very top-heavy Kansas team as well. You have to be encouraged by Johnny Furphy now consistently giving the team double figures, and no doubt about it, you're going to be able to get good production out of Hunter Dickinson, averaging a double-double, 18.5 points, 11 boards. Overall, it's a Kansas team that they do shoot 35.5% from three-point range, and they do a relatively solid job of being able to put the clamps down on opponents' three-point shooting as well. But that said, this is a Texas Tech team that it's not like they're amazing with their three-point shooting percentage. They shoot about 37.5% from three-point range, but I do feel like this is a number that's going to be coming downward a little bit as Kerber Walton is right now shooting 53.9% from three-point range. You've been able to have Chance McMillan shoot 42.5% from three, but I mean, even though the team shoots 37.5% from distance for Texas Tech, out of your top five scorers, only one guy, that would be McMillan, who I just mentioned, does shoot above 33% from distance. Pops Isaacs, along Joe Toussaint, maybe they able to combine for about 8 assists. They give you about 29 points per contest, but they are looking to knife the ball down a little bit. Then you've got a 7-footer that I like in Ward Washington, who gives you 7.5 rebounds per game, and I do think that second chances are going to be hard to come by in this game as well. You've got a Texas Tech team outside the top 100 with regards to offensive rebound rate. That's merely the percentage of your missed shots that you do get an offensive rebound on. Kansas, they're in the 242nd range as well. So I do think that that is going to be taking it out of this Kansas team a little bit. And I do think that with regards to the status of Kevin McCullough, that he plays, but he doesn't necessarily play at 100%. But this is a Kansas team that with or without him, they've been able to do a very solid job in terms of their defense. The offense is leaving something to be desired. And yeah, a Kansas team that's very mid-tempo, about 146th in the country with regards to total possessions per game. As we know, with the Grant McCaslin coach team, they're not going to get out of sorts as well. And for this Texas Tech squad, in terms of total possessions per game, they're right now about 293rd. So I do think that you have a total that's just set a little bit too high. I recognize that Texas Tech has been pretty efficient in terms of their offense, but now they've fallen on some tough times, scoring 73 points or fewer each of their last three games. So my write-up pick is going to be on the under in this spot. And even though I think that McCullough plays, I don't think that he's going to be anywhere close to 100%. As a result, me and Texas Tech, the three-point favorite. So going to be willing to lay with Texas Tech. My write-up is on the under. Now let's hit the extra games.
The normal betting board picks are complete, but there are some extra games today, so we go into the bonus.
306-629, 306-630. Bucknell is going to be playing us Lehigh, and Lehigh is an underdog of 1.5 to 2 points. So now this game is hanging between 140 and 140.5. Do have to give credit where credit is due. This Lehigh team has been dealing with quite a few injuries, and they've been able to get through it quite well, as Tyler Whitney Sidney has had to become the man of many talents. 14.5 points, 2.5 boards. Doesn't necessarily shoot it well from 3-point range, but does give them an outside presence. They've been having to hold it down for quite some time with Keith Higgins Jr. out of the fold, but he did come back in the team's last game against Lafayette, played 24 minutes in that double overtime thriller, was able to put in their 15 points, so that's very big for the team. You do have to wonder, though, how Lehigh does respond coming off of a double overtime game about 48 hours ago, and they don't necessarily have a ton down low. Don Perlin is the only guy on the roster that gives you north of 4.5 rebounds per game. It's not like this Bucknell team has, like, just monstrous size or anything like that, but Noah Williamson is a true 7-footer, gives you 12.5 points, 6.5 boards, is able to pop threes, doesn't necessarily do so amazingly at about 29.5% from distance, but you do have that first versatility there. And then you've got Jack Forrest, who I do believe is the best player out there on the floor. 16.5 points, 5.5 boards, shooting 38.5% from 3-point range. And they go up against a Lehigh team that, with regards to their rebound rate, they're about 255th. Bucknell's in that neighborhood as well, with Bucknell 13 turnovers per game, pretty comparable with Lehigh. But I do think that for Bucknell, they're going to be able to execute a little bit better in this spot. Bucknell, they've been giving it up from 3-point range at home, allowing opponents to shoot about 37% from distance. But Lehigh does shoot outside of 33% from 3-point range. And for Lehigh, by 354th in all of college basketball with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, and it does feel like for Bucknell, they're getting more of those ancillary pieces to step up as they've been dealing with some injuries to Josh Basco. That took them a little bit of time to be able to sort that out, but they've really been able to get good production out of Elvin Edmonds, who's now giving you 14-plus points per contest each out of the last three games, and in the last three games, a combined 21 assists in that time span. I think that he's a difference maker, and it's going to help Bucknell ascend in the Patriot League. They do go up against a Lehigh team as in the top 70 with regards to total possessions per game. Bucknell has been playing a little bit more slowly, and to the credit of Bucknell, in regulation, they have given up 67 points or fewer in four of their last five games. Take a look at this Lehigh team, meanwhile, they have now given up at least 68 points in four of their last five games. I do think that this is a game that's snug enough for late game fouling, so I did set my total at 142.5. I do think that Lehigh cranks up the tempo just a little bit more, so looking at the over end with Bucknell, made them a 2.5 point favorite, so want to lay the 1.5-2 with them. 3-6, 6-31, 3-6, 6-32. Lamar is on the road facing off against Incarnate Word. Incarnate Word is a home underdog of between 5.5 to 6 points. Total on this game is 152. Made Lamar the 6-point favorite, so I am going to be willing to lay the number. When it comes to Lamar, they do such a good job of having so much versatility and so many guys that just contribute to the effort. As for Lamar, each of your top four scorers average between 11 and 11.9 points per contest, with Scary Terry Anderson, along with Adam Hamilton, being able to combine for about 13 rebounds per game. And then the other two guys in BB Knight along with Chris Pryor, they both shoot between 40 and 41% from three-point range. Lamar can get a little bit loose with the ball. They do turn the ball over about 13 times per contest, but they're facing off against an Incarnate Word team that really doesn't necessarily bat down the hatches with regards to turnovers. It turns the turnovers force on a per possession basis while outside the top 225. And for Incarnate Word, not necessarily beast on the glass, they're about 236th in the country with regards to rebound rate, while Lamar is about 186th. And I was talking about Lamar turning the ball over 13 times per contest. Not great, but Incarnate Word, 15.7 turnovers per game. You might have the most versatile player out there on the floor at Sky Wicks, 14.5 points, 6.5 boards, and getting back Alex Anderson, who was a two-time transfer that was barred from playing at the beginning of part of the season, giving you about 11.5 points per game. That does give you a little bit of a booster, but this Incarnate Word team has been pretty ghastly in terms of their defense. This team does a really bad job of being able to guard the three-point arc, 318th in all of college basketball with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, and not going to go out here and say that this Lamar team is like some sort of a stalwart with regards to defense, but Lamar about 186th in the country in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, facing off against an Incarnate Word team that is currently clocking in 304. So I do think that Lamar is going to exploit an Incarnate Word team that has been looking to crank up tempo and just led to them just giving up points upon points. You've got a Lamar team that has gotten to 74 plus points in four of their last five games. Meanwhile, Incarnate Word have given up at least 75 in three of their last five, while their offense has been scuffling quite a bit. So it is a circumstance where I semi total 154. I'm looking at the over, and with Lamar, want to lay up to 5.5 points with them. 306-633, 306-634. It is Nichols, and they're going to be playing us to Texas A&M Corpus Christi. Corpus Christi, a 2.5 to a 3-point favorite. Total on this game is 138. Did semi total 142. I'm looking at the over. It's a Corpus Christi team that has played north of two-thirds of their games to the under, but it's not necessarily because they're playing slowly. I do think that you get enough possessions in this game for an over, as Corpus Christi, 118th in all of college basketball with regards to total possessions per game. Nichols is right around 91st, and this is a Nichols bunch that certainly is going to give you some open opportunities. Nichols, in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, 262nd in all of college basketball, but that is where Corpus Christi has really shown. Corpus Christi, 61st in the country in terms of points surrendered on a per possession basis. That said, they are giving up about 11.5 points more per 100 possessions in a road slash neutral court environment rather than at home, and I do think that they're going to have a tough time with this duo, as Deontay Smith along Jamal West combining for 31 points, just under 15 boards per contest. Smith is able to shoot about 38.5% from three. Now, you go up against a Nichols team that is not generating turnovers the way that they did a season ago. It's actually Corpus Christi who's been able to do a solid job being a top 75 team with regards to turnovers forced on a per possession basis. Corpus Christi leaves quite a bit of something to be desired from the outside. They shoot just 29.2% from three-point range as a collective, but Dane Prim coupled with Jordan Roberts, these two guys are now shooting north of 40% from three. They both supply you with about 8.5 points per game. And for Corpus Christi, I do think that they're going to be able to do a nice job on the glass in this game. They've got someone in Gary Clark who's been able to supply you with about 8 or so rebounds per game. In terms of the rebound rate for Corpus Christi, I have my question marks there coming into the season, but they're 59th in all of college basketball. And this is a Nichols bunch. They just aren't necessarily there other than West and Deontay Smith. You just don't have a lot, 316th in the country with regards to their rebound rate. I do think the Corpus Christi could to be able to do a solid job from within, but I do think that this Nichols team is going to be able to hit enough threes to be able to hold in this game. It is a Corpus Christi team that they do very much struggle from the outside. Meanwhile, for Corpus Christi, they are about 65th in the country with regards to opponent's three-point shooting percentage, but I do think that Nichols, with their top-end talent, they find just enough to be able to hold in this game, and this is a Corpus Christi team that has now given up at least 68 points in three of their last four games. Meanwhile, you've got a Nichols squad that have been able to get to the 73-point plateau in four of their last five. So, circumstance where I'm going to be taking a look at the over. I did set my total 142, and going to make Corpus Christi a two-point favorite. Corpus Christi has their shooting woes. They shoot right around about 68.5% the free throw line, so going to be willing to take the three here with Nichols, and going to be taking a look at this total over. I think we're close enough for late game filling. 306-635, 306-636. It is Northwestern State playing goes to New Orleans. New Orleans is an underdog of 3 to 3.5 points. Totals between 154 and 154.5. Did send New Orleans as an underdog of 2.5 points. So here at the three, I'm going to be willing to take those points for New Orleans. They're going to have by far the best scorer in this game, and that'll be Jordan Johnson. He's been supplying 21.5 points per contest. He has to shoot by volume because he doesn't have a lot around him, and he still shoots 37% from 3 points for a New Orleans team that they play at a top 100 rate with regards to total possessions per game. They turn the ball over 12.3 times per game, and though this New Orleans team is well outside the top 250 in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis, they are a squad that has been a little bit better with regards to guarding the arc. At the very least, they were about 2 weeks ago. This team was in the top 125 with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage. They've gotten just lambasted recently. Last five games are allowing opponents to shoot about 40% from three. That has climbed them up to 273rd with this regard, but it is not like they're playing against some sort of a Northwestern State team that is going to be reminding you of the Purple People Eaters. They are 198th in the country with regards to opponent's 3-point shooting percentage, and they are well outside the top 225 themselves in terms of points allowed on a per possession basis. And when it comes to this Northwestern State team, they're not going to be able to exploit the fact that New Orleans has absolutely no rebounding. New Orleans, 330th in the country with regards to rebound rate. Northwestern State, they're right around about 319th. You were relying upon guys like Addison Patterson and company coming in for the junior college level for Northwestern State. They just had injuries and, shall we say, fumbles that did not allow for that. So Cliff Davis has had to be really your main guy, shooting 41% from three, supplying the team with 15.5 points per contest with Northwestern State. This Demons bunch doesn't have a single guy in the roster that does give you 5-plus rebounds per game. Meanwhile, Jamon Vincent for New Orleans has been able to give you about 5.5 rebounds per game, though I do like the versatility of Dwayne Posey. Came in from the SWAC. He's been able to give you about 6.5 points. He's been able to supply you with about 4.5 boards per contest, and has now given you 4-plus rebounds in each of the last five games. So he's fortified things a little bit for a Northwestern State team that, to their credit, they've lost four out of their last five games, but they've been playing better. All but one of these losses were by 11 points or fewer. They've been throwing out there a much more respectable effort. The defense has been better. They've given up 73 points or fewer in each of their last three games. Offense, not gotten past 70 points in any of these games. Meanwhile, you've got a New Orleans team that they've given up north of 80 points in four of their last five games. So a circumstance of something's got to give. I do think that Johnson going to be able to take over the game for New Orleans, keep them lively in this one. I do think that we see a nice offensive explosion. Northwestern State rough with their offense, but man, this New Orleans team, they are not guarding a soul right now. And last time these two teams played, Northwestern State won by a count of 92-67. I don't think that we're going to see that duplicate itself, but in that game, you got that many points with both teams combining to go 6 of 30 from three-point range. So I did set my total 154.5. You're at the 154 looking over, and with Northwestern State, set the runs a 2.5-point favorite. Won't take 3-plus here with New Orleans. 3 of 6, 6:37. 3 of 6, 6:38. Texas Southern, they hit the road. They're facing off against Bethune-Cookman, and Bethune-Cookman does find themselves as a favorite slash a pick'em in this game, seeing them as a 1-point favorite. Total on this game is 143. Set Bethune-Cookman as a 2.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay this number. Bethune-Cookman is a top 10 team in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per possession basis. They've got one of the most interesting players in college basketball in Damani McIntyre. He averages only about 3.3 points per game, but generates 2.5 steals per contest for a team that just in terms of pure steals, so this is live ball turnovers, 11 per contest. They do a great job there. Now, the 3-point shooting for Bethune-Cookman leaves something to be desired. They're shooting about 31.1% from 3-point range, as you've got Zion Harmon, Deshaun Dyson, Jacoby Heedy as a big three in the backcourt. They've been able to combine to be able to give you about 45 points per contest between Harmon and Dyson, 7 assists per contest, and then Heedy, he's your main three-point shooter at about 34% from the outside. It is a Cookman team that they do turn the ball around 15 times per game, and it's going to be a clear little bit of a tempo war in this one. Bethune-Cookman, they're looking to play quite up-tempo. Meanwhile, you got a Texas Southern team that they feel at home playing a little bit more slowly. Texas Southern about 144th in the country with regards to total possessions per game. Bethune-Cookman more around 40th, and typically Texas Southern is one of your best teams in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate, and there's no question about it. They do have the rebounding advantage in this one. Bethune-Cookman 262nd in all of college basketball with regards to rebound rate, but Texas Southern is only about 261st in the country. Now, I do think that those numbers are a little bit misleading with the non-conference schedule that Texas Southern did play, but they're just not the same rebounding team that they've been in past years, as they don't have a single guy that gives you north of 5 rebounds per contest. So you've got a lot of guys with size, but Texas Southern, a bottom 30 team in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They only shoot about 30% from 3, turn the ball over 13 times per contest. Jonathan Cissé has been able to give you 11 points coming in from Incarnate Word. You expected a little bit more there. P.J. Henry has been in and out of the fold, and he's been able to come back and has supplied the team with 14-plus points in 4 of the last 5 games, so that's encouraging for the team. But outside of Cissé and Henry, you don't have a single guy that really gives you north of 7.5 points per contest, so that has been earning them quite a bit. Their number 3 scoring, Grayson Carter, has been in and out of the fold as well. It's just been a lot of randomness and just a lot of issues for a Texas Southern team that, to their credit, in regulation, the defense has been very good. In regulation, that takes out the overtime session that they played in their previous game. 70 points or fewer surrendered in each of their last 4 games, and they've given up 73 points or less in every one of their SWAC games this far this season. A big reason why I did set this total at a 140.5, despite the fact that Bethune-Cookman has been a bottom 75 team in the country with regards to total possessions per game. But for Bethune-Cookman, they themselves, 72 points or fewer surrendered in 4 of their last 5 games, so I do think they get a lower scoring slug. But with Texas Southern not being what they've been in past years on the glass, I do think that Bethune-Cookman with their turnovers gets the job done. Set Bethune-Cookman as a 2.5-point favorite, so taking them as a 1-point favorite, I'm looking at the under 306-689, 306-640. McNeese is going to be on the road facing off against Houston Christian, and Houston Christian is a underdog of anywhere between 18 to 20 points in your total on this game. It is 150. I set my line at an 18. This was an opener of 17. Houston Christian just getting absolutely crushed on the line, and I can't really blame people, but I'm going to be willing to take what is north of 18 in a lot of spots. As of right now, I'm seeing one straight 20, but a lot of places more around an 18 and a half to a 19. That would still be a take for me on Houston Christian, as Houston Christian, they're a bottom 75 team in the country in terms of both points scored and points allowed on a per-possession basis, and this is a McNeese team that they are pretty much leading the conference in darn near every category, but I do think that we've went a little bit extreme here, especially when you consider the fact that McNeese is just not a team that plays super-duper up-tempo to be able to cover these sorts of spreads. McNeese is 313th in the country in terms of total possessions per game. Now, Houston Christian is 17th in the country. They are looking to run it and gun it and just rip it down your throat, and it is a Houston Christian team that they just can't shoot it from three-point range. They're shooting about 29.5% from three. You've got two guys on the roster that have supplied you with north of 7 points total this season, not per game, 7 total points this season. They're shooting above 29% from 3-point range. Dom Capriotti is able to give you about 6.5 points per contest, and I do like what Marcus Green brings to the table. Shoots 42% from 3, 14.5 points per game, but really past those two guys, you don't have anything from the outside, though. You've been able to get some good production when he's been out there in Jay Alvarez. He's been in and out of the fold, but he is in right now, and he's supplying you with about 16 points, about 2 assists, a steal per game, so I like what he's been able to bring to the table. And for Houston Christian's credit, there's not a lot of things that this team has been doing incredibly thus far, but they've been able to guard the three-point line. Houston Christian, 63rd in the country in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. McNeese, they're about 221st in the country, and McNeese has actually been able to guard the arc better on the road rather than at home, and you're going to have Christian Shulmate be able to dominate down low, 9.5 boards, 16 plus points per contest out of your main scorer, Chahada Wells. Meanwhile, Shulmate, he gives you closer to about 12 to 13 points per contest. You've been able to get DJ Richards back in fold. He's shooting 46.5% from 3, and McNeese, while they play slowly, they're very efficient with their offense. The top 100 team with the greatest points scored on a per-possession basis, fewer than 10 turnovers per game. They shoot 39% from 3-point range, but I do think that Easter Christian takes a little bit of that away. Easter Christian get a loose battle on the glass, 284th in the country with regards to their rebound rate. Meanwhile, for McNeese, this is by far your best rebounding team in the conference at about 143rd. That said, I do think that for McNeese, I do think that this is a number that's starting to get just a little bit lofty, especially with the way that Houston Christian does take away the three-point line. I do think that this just turns into a little bit more of a slog where McNeese gets out of Dodge with more like a 17 to 18 point win. So I did set my line at 18. I'm going to be willing to take the north of 18 here with Eastern Christian. Made my total 144 as well. I do think that Eastern Christian, a bunch that has been struggling with their offense. They have scored now 73 points or fewer in three of their last four games, going up against a McNeese team that has allowed 67 or fewer in four of their last five games. Going to be in a little bit of a lower scoring affair. So looking at the under and going to be taking a look at the points with Eastern Christian. 36-641, 36-642. Texas A&M Commerce is going to be playing us to Southeast Louisiana. Southeast Louisiana, 1-point favorite to a pick'em. Totals between 130.5 and 131. Did set my total 134. I'm looking at the over. Commerce is a top 125 team in all of college basketball regards to total possessions per game. Southeast Louisiana is in the bottom 100, but for the Texas A&M Commerce team, they're just going to get bludgeoned on the glass. They are outside the top 335 in terms of rebound rate. Not to say that Southeast Louisiana is an amazing rebounding team, but they've got a little bit more than that at about 175th with Roger McFarland and his versatility, supplying 8 boards, 14.5 points on 35.5% 3-point shooting. And then you are able to couple that with the best facilitator being on the side of Southeast Louisiana as well. Bowden Woodbury has been able to give you right around about 5.5 boards to help out McFarland. Then you get the 5-plus assists per contest out of Rocco Eastman. Eastman is not necessarily a dynamic scorer with about 8 points per game, but he does shoot 35.5% from 3 when he needs to. Problem has been the 13.5 turnovers per game. To the credit of Commerce, this is a top 80 team in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis, but they just need to get more production outside of what you've been able to get out of really your main two, as Jerome Brewer has been able to give you 14 points per contest, and then Caleb Williams, he supplies about 15 points per contest. He's able to shoot in the high 30s from three-point range, but the team is dealing right now with an injury to that number two scorer in Brewer, so they've had to have Tommy Lewis really be able to step up. And to his credit, Lewis double figures in four of the last five games, shooting 38% from three-point range, but as a whole, it's a Commerce team that they do shoot about 32% from three-point range. They don't do a great job down low with nobody on the roster being able to give you north of 5 rebounds per game, though. I will say, they do go up against the Southeast Louisiana team that is going to give you open looks from three-point range, 236th in all of college basketball in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. Texas A&M Commerce is going to do the same at 220th. And then when you got someone like Nick Caldwell, who's staying 6'8", shooting in the high 30s from three-point range and putting up double figures for Southeast Louisiana, I think that that'll be just enough for them to be able to get it done. I do think that this is going to be a rather tight game as the backcourt of Commerce keeps them in there, but I do think that the rebounding of Southeast Louisiana, a team that has outscored at least 69 points in each other last four games, wins out. I did set my total at 134 looking over, and with Southeast Louisiana, want to lay up to 1.5 with them. 306-643, 306-644. Alabama A&M is on the road facing off against Grambling. Grambling an 8.5 to a 9-play favorite. Total saying between 135.5 and 136.5. I did set my total at 134.5. I'm looking at the under. Grambling overall for the season well outside the top 250 in terms of total possessions per game, but with Grambling, this team has been much more beastly with regards to their defense in conference play. And this Alabama A&M team has been one of the worst offenses in all of college basketball. You got Dalen Smith, who's been able to give you a double-figure amount of points per game, but past that, really nobody is supplying anything for this team. As in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis, Alabama A&M 332nd in the country. And for Alabama A&M, they do have a fall-off in terms of points per 100 possessions of about 13.7 when they do leave home. Meanwhile, they go up against a Grambling team that has been one of the worst offenses in all of college basketball themselves. They've been able to bust through a little bit more, but 328th out of 362 D1 teams. That is far from incredible. And for the Grambling bunch, they have been turning the ball over 13.5 times for contests. They have been able to get a little bit more out of their backcourt recently. Trey Michael Morton has been able to give you about 9 to 10 points per contest to be able to help out the cause a little bit, but you would like to see more than about 31% three-point shooting. But it's, you do go up against an Alabama A&M team that, if you're looking for opportunities, they're going to be able to offer them to you. Alabama A&M, 348th in the country in terms of opponent's three-point shooting percentage. And this is an Alabama A&M team that doesn't have a single guy in the roster that gives you north of 4.5 rebounds per game. Now, the good news for them is that Cameron Tucker out of the fold to begin the season. He's come back and he's been able to do a relatively okay job for this team, but not going to offset the fact that Jonathan Aku probably going to be the best rebounder in this game. He's been able to supply Grambling with 6-plus rebounds per game. It is a Grambling team that's only about 301st in the country with regards to rebound rate, while Alabama A&M, they're more around 275th. But again, who's going to provide those rebounds for this Alabama A&M team? Coupled with that, with the fact that Grambling got out of the fold, one of those two-time transfers, and Antoine Burnett fact that ever since he's come back, he's been out there for 14 games. He's supplied the team with 19 points, a steal, 6 boards on the mid-30s, 3-point shooting percentage. So he has been a nice difference maker for Grambling, and a big reason why they haven't been able to ascend recently. This Grambling team has now won 4 out of the last 5 games. Defense has held up, giving up 68 points or fewer in 4 of the last 5 games, going up against an Alabama A&M team that, to their credit, they haven't been able to get past the 70-point plateau in 3 of their last 4 games. But I do think that that was a case of circumstantial, shall we say, scheduling with regards to this fact. I do think that Grambling is going to do a nice job bearing down with their defense. Grambling outside the top 275 in terms of total possessions per game. I do think that they slow it down and they dominate this game. Set Grambling as a 10.5-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay the number and set my total 134.5. So looking at this 135.5 to 136 under. 306-645, 306-646. Mississippi Valley State plays us at Alcorn State. Alcorn State, a 10.5 to an 11-point favorite. Your total is between 135.5 and 136. Made Alcorn State a 13-point favorite. I'm going to be willing to lay it. Alcorn State well outside the top 300 in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. But Mississippi Valley State, they are dead last in the country in terms of points scored on a per-possession basis. They are pretty much dead last in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis as well. Now, credit where credit is due, Mississippi Valley State has been able to cover some numbers recently. I believe that they have now covered 3 out of their last 4 games. That said, you just need a little bit more than having Raekwon Brown try to do it all by himself. 16.5 points, 6.5 boards for a team that shoots 26.5% from 3. They lead the country in terms of turnovers on a per-possession basis. You have had a pair of guys in Areko Gibson, along with Donovan Sanders. They have combined for about 21.5 points per contest. Gibson is currently shooting 50% from 3. Certainly think that there's going to be a fall off there, but for Mississippi Valley State, one of the worst teams with regards to rebound rate in all of college basketball, and you should see Jeremiah Kendall be able to take over the game down low. 16 points, 6.5 boards per contest. Alcorn State in their own right, not necessarily a great rebounding team at 224th in all of college basketball, but at the very least, Alcorn State, when they're in the ball for just 12 times per contest, they're able to get some good free-flowing offense going. Alcorn State leaves something to be desired in terms of their outside shooting when they do leave home, as they shoot about 39.3% from three-point range at home, more like 32% in a road-slash-neutral environment. But Mississippi Valley State, also one of the worst teams in all of college basketball, at giving up the three-point line as well. For Alcorn State, you've also got a pair of guys in Jeremiah Gambrell along with Byron Joshua. They're combining for about 24 points per contest. Gambrell shoots about 39% from three-point range for an Alcorn State team has been able to be quite a bit more efficient recently with regards to their offense. This team has also been able to shape up a little bit in terms of defense. 71 points per fear surrendered in 4 of their last 5 games after they were ghastly outside the conference. I did set my total at 137. Doesn't sound like much, but for Mississippi Valley State, they've gotten to at least 69 points in 3 of their last 5 games. Clearly, slack play has done some wonders for this offense. The defense continues to be rather rough, so this is a circumstance where I'm actually going to be willing to take the over on the 136, just because I also do think that Mississippi Valley State is going to be really giving it up on offense at Alcorn State, a top 100 team with regards to total possessions per game. So, looking at the over, and I'm willing to lay up to 12.5 with Alcorn State, 306-647, 306-648. Arkansas Pine Bluff plays host to Jackson State. This game is a pick'em with a total between 156.5 and 157. After being the top over team in all of college basketball, Arkansas Pine Bluff has seen a few bumps in the road in terms of their offense. This team has now scored 74 points or fewer in 3 out of their last 5 games. Defense has been a little bit better. They have given up 80 points or fewer, which doesn't sound like much, but for them it is. In each of their last 5 games, as Pine Bluff, a bottom 10 team in all of college basketball in terms of both rebound rate and points allowed on a per possession basis. They go up against a Jackson State team that they should be able to control things down low. Zeke Cook has been able to do a nice job with 7.2 rebounds per game for Jackson State, so I will say Ishmael Plett has now been able to give you about 7 rebounds per game out of Arkansas Pine Bluff, but really nobody else for Pine Bluff does a good job hitting the glass, as you've got a threesome in the backcourt that really does a nice job of being able to launch from 3-point range and is providing about 51 points per contest. And Joe French, Kyler Milton, along with Rashad Williams, these three guys all shoot at least 39.4% from 3-point range. And for Arkansas Pine Bluff as a collective, they are shooting darn near 39.5% from 3-point range. That is a top 20 mark in all of college basketball. For Arkansas Pine Bluff, though, very interesting that they're shooting 33.3% from 3-point range at home, more like about 38% from 3-point range in a road-slash shoot-to-court environment. So do find that to be a little bit fascinating. And then for Jackson State, you've got a nice go-to scorer in Kat Evans, who's been able to give you 18.5 points per contest, with Chase Adams, who comes in from Portland, along with the non-D1 level, being able to dole right around about 4.5 assists, 2 turnovers per game. Jackson State sometimes gets loose with the ball with about 14 turnovers per game, but it's a Pine Bluff team that they really don't exert their will in terms of being able to generate turnovers, and it is a Jackson State team that they themselves have had a few issues with regards to their offense. 71 points of fear scored in 3 out of their last 5 games, so the defense has been leaking some oil, giving up 70-plus in four of their last five games, with the lone exception giving up 69 points to Mississippi Valley State. That almost feels like 80, so I do think that you do get a higher scoring game in this one. I did set my total 163. I'm going to be looking at the over. I do, though, think that Jackson State wins from within. Pine Bluff just has not been able to guard us all season long, and I do think that the recent defensive surge, a little bit of an admiration. So looking at the over, and I'm going to be willing to take Jackson State, made them a 3-point favorite, 306-649, 306-650. Southern plays those to Alabama State. Alabama State, a 4.5 to a 5-point underdog. And your total on this game, you're going to be getting it anywhere between 134 and 134.5. I did set my total 137.5. I'm looking at the over. You've got a pair of teams that have really been your best two defenses, I would say, in the SWAC, though. You do have both of these teams playing at a relatively up-tempo pace, and I think that the sheer possessions are going to be able to get you there. This is a Southern bunch that, in terms of total possessions per game, they're clocking in at 62nd in all of college basketball. Meanwhile, Alabama State, they're more in that neighborhood, about 83rd, and Southern has been able to run some okay offense. I'm not saying they're an amazing offense or 302nd in all of college basketball in total points scored on a per-possession basis, but Tayron Joseph is playing with north of 20 points per contest. You've also been able to get some really good facilitation from this team, as don't find a lot of guys going up 5-plus assists in the SWAC, but you've got Tijani Domasi with a big game here. He'll be able to climb up there. He's at about 4.9 assists per contest. Now, Southern, where they're going to lose this battle, is down low. You've only got one guy that's able to give you north of 5 rebounds per game. That'd be Tarek Tezeno. Meanwhile, you got Ubong Okan, who's been able to give Alabama State more around 6.5 rebounds per game. And when it comes to Alabama State, TJ Madlock is a nice do-it-all player. 16 points, 4.5 boards, 2 assists, 2 steals. Doesn't necessarily shoot it well from 3, and that's a big thing with this Alabama State team. They just, year in and year out, have been one of the worst teams with regards to field goal shooting percentage. CJ Hines has been able to give you double figures. He's shooting in the neighborhood about 39% from 3-point range. Outside of Hines, you really don't have anyone on the roster that shoots above 32% from 3-point range for Alabama State. They're about 232nd in the country with regards to rebound rate. Southern is about 348, so second and third chances should be coming to this team. Isaiah Range has been a little bit of a disappointment for Alabama State. He's only giving you about 9.5 points per contest, so I do think that this could be a big game for him. He had 11 points last time out against Grambling after he had scored a combined 12 points in the previous four games, so that was a little bit alarming. And for Alabama State, while they don't necessarily do the world's greatest job of being able to develop great shots, they are a bunch that they only turn the ball over about 11.8 times per game. With their total amount of possessions, that's honestly not bad, and both of these teams are relatively solid at being able to generate turnovers. With the fact that Southern does turn the ball over about 13 times per contest, that does have to have you have a little bit of trepidation. But with Southern, ninth in the country in terms of turnovers force on a per-possession basis, that does climb into the top 6 nationally. It turns into, do you think that Southern is going to be able to turn Alabama State over? I do think so, and I do think that Joseph is going to be the best scorer out there in this game, and I do think that this game is still good enough for late-game felling. So I did sell my total 137.5, looking at the over with Southern. Made them a 7.5-point favorite, so I'm willing to lay up to 7 with them. I wrap things up with 306. 651, 306, 652. It is Florida A&M, and they play us at Prairie View. Prairie View is a favorite of a point. Total on this game is 149. I did set my total at 150.5. I'm looking at the over. Both of these teams have been able to do a nice job of being able to generate some turnovers, especially Prairie View. Prairie View, year in and year out, is an underrated team. Eighth in the country in terms of turnovers forced on a per-possession basis. Florida A&M not quite on that same wavelength. And for Florida A&M, the big key for this team is having Jalen Spears take over this game. He has been injured throughout the entirety of the season, but when he's been out there, he's been able to supply the team with 17-plus points per contest. Shoots it relatively well from the outside for our Florida A&M team that is in the bottom 10 nationally in terms of points allowed on a per-possession basis. And for Florida A&M, the big key is being able to take care of the ball, because with Florida A&M, this team has been turning the ball over about 15 times per contest, but they do shoot it at about 36% from three, with Spear being able to shoot 45%+ from three. Keith Lamar generating about 6 boards, 13 points per contest, shooting 39% to 40% from 3-point range. That is massive. Going up against a Prairie View team that they've got a little bit more from the outside than in past years. You've got a pair of guys in Charles Smith, the fourth, who comes over from Old Dominion, along with Javonte Hopkins, who comes over from Tarleton State, who have been able to supply a combined 28 points per game. Smith has been able to shoot 37.5% from 3-point range, and they do go up against a Florida A&M team that there is a bunch that is certainly going to give it up from 3-point range. It is Florida A&M. They, in terms of opponents' 3-point shooting percentage, are in the bottom 50 in all of college basketball. Matter of fact, 343rd in all of college basketball. For this Prairie View team, they are very much a team that is going to gamble for turnovers. As a result, they're a bottom 20 team in the country in terms of their rebound rate. They also do give it up from 3-point range quite a bit as well. 219th in the country, though. Now opponents should shoot 37% from 3-point range at home, more like 33.4% in a road/neutral court environment. I do think that this is going to be very much an up and down game involving a far an M team that's just absolutely awful with regards to their defense, and a Prairie View team that they're looking to play quite up tempo, and if they don't get a turnover, they're going to give up an easy bucket. On the flip side, it's a Prairie View team that they themselves have allowed 74 plus points at each other last five games. So I do think that, you know, nice high scoring expose, but a game where Prairie View forces enough turnovers to be able to get the win. I set Prairie View as a 2.5 point favorite, one to lay up to 2 with them, set my total at a 150.5. So also looking at the over, and that'll wrap things up for the Monday edition of Coast to Coast Hoops, now part of the VSiN Family Podcast. A big thanks to Nick Lawrenson of Mid-Major Madness for joining me in the last segment. If you do like what you're hearing from this fine podcast, Coast to Coast Hoops, you're able to subscribe wherever your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Google Play, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn. If you have a question, comment, segment idea, what have you for this podcast, do have one of two ways to be able to listen. First one is my Twitter/X timeline at @GNN_81. Keep in mind, letters EM, naming does not matter, so as per usual, please do send these into the timeline. Other ways, via an Apple Podcast review. If you rate this podcast 5 stars, it is very much appreciated. And then from there, you're able to fire on whatever you'd like to hear on this podcast via that 5-star review. Coming at you guys every single day throughout the college basketball season, and that means I'm coming at you once again tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning in.
MTV's official Challenge podcast is back for another season.
And so are we.
I'm Tori Deal.
And I'm Anissa Ferreira.
The wait is over, guys. All Stars 4 is finally here.
And this season takes it to a whole new level. Old school legends, modern power players, and ex-lovers are all competing in Cape Town, South Africa for the prize of $300,000.
And we're going to be right here along with you fans, covering every episode on the podcast.
Listen to MTV's official Challenge podcast on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, listener. I'm Carol Fisher, the host of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister. I'm so excited for you to hear the brand new season where we're uncovering a 35-year-old mystery. But for those of you who didn't hear season one or just want to listen to it again, you can now get access to all episodes of that first season of The Girlfriends 100% ad-free through the iHeart True Crime Plus subscription, which is available exclusively on Apple Podcasts. You'll also get access to every single episode of The Girlfriends, Our Lost Sister, ad-free and 1 week early, only available to iHeart True Crime Plus subscribers. So what are you waiting for? Head to Apple Podcasts, search for iHeart True Crime Plus, and subscribe today.
I'm Saleha Mohsen, and I've covered economic policy for years and reported on how it impacts people across the United States. In 2016, I saw how voters were leaning towards Trump and how so many Americans felt misunderstood by Washington. So I started The Big Take DC. We dig into how money, politics, and power shape government and the consequences for voters. With new episodes every Thursday, you can listen to The Big Take DC on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.